everybody. Welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Homer Apple Sauce's Minor League Podcast. I am Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Hot. Yeah, it's hot out.
It is. It is very hot.
Just going to go down to the park, take some swings, and walk the dog and said, you know, not doing that. I'm going back inside.
I literally just walked in the door from doing, like, grocery shopping stuff, and I was like, dear God.
Not going back out. All right, so promote, extend, trade. And today is the Dominican Pride Parade. So it would have been hot, but it would have been fun. But instead of being up there partying, I am here, locked in my mother's basement with a spreadsheet open on my desktop. I'm crunching some numbers with a graphing calculator, and I'm doing it all because I love you, our loyal listeners.
What the where are we going with this?
Well, it's Dominican Pride Day. Dominican Pride Day, so we should extend, promote, trade some great Dominican players. And they all literally happen to play for the same team at the same exact time, so that makes it easier. Promote, extend, trade. Pedro, Poppy, Manny.
Ooh. Oh. That's tough.
I don't know.
Are we doing this as, like, our favorite, who we think was the best? Like, what's the criteria?
Whatever criteria you want to use. I have to extend Pedro he's literally one of the greatest of all time, and he's also a Met, and he's also, like, a character. You know, that's, like, it hits all three boxes.
And from what I understand, like, good vibes from Pedro. Like, yeah. Seems like a pretty good guy. Like, he seems like a pleasant dude. I know one of my old coaches worked for the Mets a little. Like, he did, like some of the on-field, like, T-shirt toss stuff and all that. And he said Pedro was always really nice. So, and he was always really nice to everyone who worked there. So, that's a nice little plus in my book.
Yeah, I think I'm going to put Pedro at the top here just for that. Back when Noah Syndergaard was Thor still, that Thor vine. Oh, yeah. Thor. I watched that on, like, loops in 2015 or whatever that was, which is 8 years ago.
Let's not think about that.
That's painful. I might just do him in the order you listed. I think, like, Pedro, Poppy, Manny. Manny always annoyed me. Poppy was more funny.
I like both Manny and Poppy and Big Poppy, but, like, if you put them side by side, I think Big Poppy is just better. Like,
yeah, I think he is the better player statistically.
Manny was more of a... I feel like Big Poppy was a character, but Manny was more of a character. Like, the whole Manny being Manny shit was, like, really fun.
Yes.
And watching him do all that was really fun, but also, like, David Ortiz was just... He's like he feels like a baseball pillar for me. Like, when he retired, even though I'm not a Red Sox fan, I was like, what the hell? Like, no, don't do that. You know what I mean?
You're not allowed to do that.
I have to go Manny over Poppy just because Manny is more... Just because Manny being Manny. I think it has its own, like, Wikipedia page, so when your antics have their own Wikipedia page, I feel like that's you've gone above and beyond. Or if not a page, at least a section in his Wikipedia page.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, Poppy literally got shot and he just, like, no-sold it, and he's just like, yeah, I'm not gonna die. So
I forgot about that, actually.
Yeah.
Poppy was a character. How do I say this without sounding like I belong on WFAN here or something. How do I say this without going full Sal Licata? I don't know. I do not know how to pronounce his name, nor do I really care. Poppy was a character, but it was never about him, if that makes sense. Like, clearly just gave the most shits about winning.
Yeah.
Manny's whole thing was Manny. And that's fun to an extent, but I think Manny took, at least for me, it was to the point where it was like a little tiresome with Manny Ramirez in a way. Yeah. I never felt about Big Poppy.
I completely understand and agree. When, you know, David Ortiz, you know that he had a big personality, but that never like caused problems that we knew about with the teams. It never caused like negative back page headlines, things like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas Manny, it quite often did. Also, I just realized, it just popped into my head. We also have to take into account Manny's Manny's career in Taiwan.
Oh God.
When he signed his contract that guaranteed like all you can eat sushi, and one of the greatest announcer calls of all time was made.
I don't recall this.
Whether the announcer is just like, oh, that one is gone, just like your ex-girlfriend.
Oh, what the hell? I don't recall this.
Mm-hmm. It is definitely a memorable call. And I'm 99% sure that Manny was the one that hit that home run.
How? Either I've completely memory-holed this, which is possible, or I
want to say it was like 2013 maybe.
Huh.
He went to play in Taiwan. I think it was for the Rhinos was the team.
Sure, whatever.
It was before he came back and became the player manager of the Iowa Cubs.
Like that stuff is awesome from Manny.
Right.
Like that adds to it for me, because like David Ortiz, like, yeah, he retired and then he went on Fox, I think he was doing for the playoffs, and it was great. Like, he's funny on there and he does funny post-career analyst stuff. But like Manny Ramirez was out here playing overseas and like player managing teams and shit. Like, that is so funny. That's like some dead ball era stuff that you don't see anymore from players. And that's the type of stuff that will make him like a lasting funny memory and a cool, and obviously he was also extremely good. Like,
mm-hmm.
The Manny being Manny stuff aside, he was one of the best players in baseball for years. You know, like, it's not like he was a scrub doing all this stuff. Like, he was amazing. But I don't know, all that stuff is so funny to me and just so fun because you just don't see that shit anymore.
No. He also inspired one of the original Amazing Avenue memes too, with hello, hello, Mr. Wilpon. We want the mansion, not the condo. That's going way back.
That is actually even before my time at Amazing Avenue.
Yeah, that's...
It is weird to think that I am one of the longer tenured people at Amazing Avenue at this point. It's very strange to think about. Steve's been here longer than me.
It's been 83 years.
It's very odd to think about.
And the Mets are basically in the same situation now that they were. When did you start writing? Like maybe 2014?
It was my first, because I had my first hip surgery after the freshman year of undergrad. So that would have been the summer of 2014. And I think I had written a very, very, very long fan post about how the Mets should not trade Brandon Nimmo and Noah Syndergaard for Troy Tulowitzki. Nice. Good call. Good call, literally, by the nailed way. It. And then, like, the next day, Eric posted, like, hey, we're looking for writers. I'm like, well, I wrote this thing. Is that good? And he said, yes. And then now I'm still here somehow. Anyway, that meme you're referencing is before even my time.
Oh, yeah, no, that is... I mean, when was Manny Ramirez a free agent? I want to say it was like 2005? Was the Lastings Millage Manny Ramirez trade rumors? Either 2005 or 2006. So, I mean, that's basically going back to that.
Yeah, that's a
we're talking time. Like, you know, we're talking antediluvian era of Mason
Avenue. Antediluvian era of Mason Avenue.
Going way back. Oh, well, just like in 2014, the minor league system was starting to look good. The Mets minor league system is starting to look good now, so everything repeats itself. We'll take a look at the Mets affiliates right now first. Syracuse Mets played the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders, and they went 2-4, so another losing week for them. But we definitely have to highlight Mike Vasil's start on Tuesday. It's definitely worth mentioning. Through 8 no-hit innings, walked 2 batters, and then eventually allowed a hit in the 9th inning. And then he pitched again today, and he threw 5 more scoreless innings before he eventually gave up a 3-run homer to Jake Lamb. But 12-inning scoreless streak altogether, not bad. He's kind of been struggling since he got promoted to AAA, but he came into the week with a 7.04 ERA, and he lowered it to 5.48. So when you could lower your ERA by about a run and a half, that shows, A, how bad you are coming into the week, and B, how good you are. So... worrisome on the whole for his season, but trending in the right direction.
Yeah, it's probably just adjusting to.
Yeah.
I'm very not concerned about some initial struggles at AAA. Like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. It happens.
So Syracuse, they are 13-25 in the second half and are 10.5 games back. So not much going on there. Binghamton Rumble Ponies, they played the Somerset Patriots this week, and coming into the week they were 2 games behind first place, and first place was occupied by those same Somerset Patriots. So not only did we have a Mets Yankees subway series, but it was a series of some implications. And Rumble Ponies won the first 2 games, and they moved into a tie for first place with Somerset, but then they lost the next 2 games. And they weren't even just losses, but they were just blowout, devastating shutout losses. They lost 14-0 on Thursday, and Tyler Stewart's ERA just got destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had another embarrassing loss on Friday. They lost 9-0. So not great. Saturday, they shut out Somerset. Christian Scott had a good outing. And they are playing the last game of the series right now as we record. So Binghamton is a game behind the Patriots. They are 19-18 in the second half now. So if they win this last game, they move into a tie for first place. And if they lose the game, they fall back down to trailing them by 2 games, which is where they were coming to the series, excuse me. And I think it's crazy that if Binghamton wins, they'll have a 20-18 record, and that's good enough in first place.
That's the minor leagues, baby.
Yep. We're 2 games over 500. We're number one. The Brooklyn Cyclones now, they played the Aberdeen Ironbirds, and they took the series 4-2. So that boosts their record to 26-16 in the second half. And they are 2 games in front of the Lakewood Blue Claws, who are 8-2 in their last 10 games. So they are heating up, and Brooklyn needs to be watching the rearview mirror, unfortunately. Not exactly a runaway. And St. Lucie, they played the Palm Beach Cardinals, another losing week. They went 2-4, just like Syracuse. And also like Syracuse, they are well below 500. They are 13-29 on the season. They are the worst team in all of single-A baseball. But here's the silver lining. If the Stockton Ports, which is the Oakland A's low-A team, if they lose tonight when they play them at Dusto Nuts, they're going to be tied with St. Lucie as the worst team in all of low A baseball. So, excuse me, single A baseball. So,
yay.
Hopefully they lose and we can say that, you know, St. Lucie at least is not the worst. They have some company. Which is sad because that's literally the best thing I think that we can say about St. Lucie right now. And last but not least, the Florida Complex League Mets. They had a rough week for a change. They actually had a losing week. They went 2-3, and they got outscored 25 runs to 44 runs allowed. So not a great week. They still have a commanding lead, though, in the division, in the league. I don't really know what to call it. But they are 27-17 on the year. And they are 4 games ahead of the Marlins FCL team. So looks like there's a championship possibly in store for the FCL Mets.
They have so many infielders. It's so funny. They can't even play all of them. They have to promote some guys.
Yeah, this is where we see how much it sucks that 2 low-level teams were cut. Because Kingsport Mets.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just days where, like, Vargas doesn't play, and, like, there were multiple times this week, maybe last week, too, that Vargas just didn't play, and he's, like, your number 3 prospect, you know? Like, he should be playing every day, but you need to get other guys in. Like, that's the only way to, they're moving guys around the diamond, which is kind of nice to get them experience in different positions, but still. It's just losing the lower minors like that. It sucks for releases, because more guys get released during the season, I think, now. And this stuff where you don't want to promote them all the way to St. Lucie, but it's a big jump, but you kind of have to make it, you know, mm-hmm. You have a choice.
Well, got to save a couple of bucks.
Yeah.
It I don't know. It is weird that they're. It just feels like that there needs to be a mid-season affiliate somewhere. I mean, yeah. I know like the Complex League starts in like middle or end of June, but I mean, you still already have an entire roster full of those players, and you know, from the DSL or guys that are in the organization that are still repeating it from the season before or whatever, and then you're drafting, you know, another 20 players. A percentage of them, you know, are going to be starting off at the lowest levels of the minors. It just, I don't know. It just seems like something that really is necessary. Yeah, it sucks. Like, exactly. Well, the owners suck. All right. So a few weeks ago, we did an informal mid-season prospect list update, and it made sense at the time because, you know, Baseball America was doing it, MLB was doing it, I think Baseball Prospectus was doing it, you know, everyone else was doing it. And in retrospect, maybe it wasn't the smartest time to do that, because literally a week or two after we made our lists, the Mets made a ton of trades. They shipped off basically anyone with value, and they got back a ton of prospects. And the farm system literally transformed from like a unanimous bottom third system to a borderline top 10 system. And there's a lot of change, such that we really needed to reorder things, because you don't turn your system from a bottom third system to a borderline top 10 system without getting back some players of impact. And the Mets definitely did that. So this week we are just basically redoing everything we did last week, or like 3 weeks ago. So we'll just go over each, I guess, position first. Number one, who do you guys have as the Mets' number one prospect?
Drew Gilbert.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I went with Acuna. I feel like it's 1 and 1A, though, to be honest.
Well, I have a... I think it's more like the top five could be interchanged, but...
Mm.
That's really... That's where I'm at, but yeah. So...
Acuna is not someone I was or am particularly high on. This is not a profile I tend to love. If we're gonna get excited about a guy who, for lack of a better word, is kind of tweener-ish, and I know that's usually applied to outfielders, but what I mean by that is that there's like not super high-end defense, mm-hmm. not super high-end power. I'm more willing to bet on that profile if I believe in the approach. And unfortunately, Acuna's biggest question mark is his approach. None of this is to say he's a bad prospect. I think he's still a top 50 guy. He's still a borderline top 50 guy. He's still a great return for Max Scherzer. Like, I still do not understand what the Rangers were thinking. All of this is just to say that I think there's a bigger gap between Gilbert and Acuna than them being interchangeable.
I flip-flopped like 5 times.
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I do think he could be a plus second baseman if they move him there. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him enough in the outfield. I wonder if they're going to move him to center. Also, he could be like a just kind of play all over type of guy. Like, you don't need to put him in one spot and just let him rock there. He could play multiple positions and it's fine. Give Lindor more off days and stuff like that. But yeah, the approach worries me too. But I put Gilbert first just because I think there's a little more. Like, even though Gilbert was not great in Double A this year,
that's basically what caused me to put him as two.
I just think that Gilbert has more of a chance to hit for more authority. He could probably be a good center fielder. And so I don't think it's a big leap in logic to make that he would be a very good corner outfielder. So I just kind of have Gilbert there for that reasons over him. I think he's just a little more advanced right now than Acuna, but also Acuna's 21 in Double A and was really good for the Rangers. Like, he's been kind of whatever as a Met so far, but it's like a few weeks, who cares? But, yeah, I think they're both the top two guys. I think you could interchange the top five, and we could get into that as we go. But I think, for me, they're my top two.
So you guys have Acuna as number two?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, so yeah, so Gilbert, Acuna, 1, 2. We all agree. 3. I think we probably all have the same. I'm going to say Jett Williams is my third.
This is where my flip-flopping starts. But I'm also Jet at this spot right now.
I have Vargas.
Mm.
I also just saw Jet mm-hmm. live. I saw him Friday. And a few things stood out to me that worried me. Obviously, I still like him. I'm not trying to be a hater. I very much like him. I fully understand why they picked him. Da-da-da. I know I didn't like him pre-draft last year, but I came around to it. I don't think he's going to be able to be a consistent center fielder with how bad his arm is. Like, it's really bad in the outfield. That means I don't think he could play third base. He probably can't play shortstop. He's probably just a second baseman, which isn't the worst thing in the world, but it also hurts you, like, flexibility-wise. You can't play him in right, the arm. So I know this is just one play, but one of the guys on Aberdeen hit a single, and it was like a routine single. And they tried to stretch it for a double. And it was a throw that I could make on a line. And Jet bounced it. And it was like, oof, like you have to make that throw on a line, you know? And it's just one of those things where if you're doing that in the majors, people are going to take extra bases on you. People are going to abuse that. So he has the range to play center, like defensively to get to all the balls. So if you don't care about an arm at all, then fine. But to me, that was a little worrying. And he has a big hole in his swing at the top of the zone right now. And he just got abused there all day. Like, they just kept throwing him high velocity, and he swung under it. That doesn't mean he can't fix it, and he probably will, And so it's just, for me, I'm not stock down, but Vargas looks like he has the batted ball profile. I know he's younger in a worse league, but he has the batted ball profile. I think he has a little more defensive flexibility from what I understand. So that's where I kind of have Vargas 3 and Jet 4. But, I mean, you could flip-flop. Like I said, I'm about to talk a lot about my number 5 guy in a second, but that's really the difference for me right now.
All right, so number 4. Well, I'm sorry.
I thought, and we're going to get to this guy in a second, I imagine. I thought Thomas was going to flip-flop someone else into this spot, to be totally honest.
This is where one of my hot takes is going to come from. So
I have the outlines of a bold prediction here as well, but yes, we should keep going. Yes.
All right, so number 4. Here's where all the hot takes start. All right, so someone give me a number 4.
Vargas.
Okay.
For me, it's Jet.
Right.
Oh shit! Then I guess 5 is where
the hot take. Oh, who'd you put 4?
Here's my hot take: Blade Tidwell.
Ooh. What?
Why?
I still don't see. The numbers are fine. I think the stuff has looked good, and I think that the ceiling is still very good. And I have a bias towards pitchers just because there's a more utility in them in case they fail. You know, you could always throw Tidwell in the bullpen and it'll work. You can't do that with, you know, Jet Williams. Not that there's wrong with Jet, but since we just brought him up before. So I feel like pitchers are just going to have a naturally higher floor because of that. And as a result, I am biased.
I understand the philosophical point around pitchers versus hitters.
And again, the fastball has been fine. The slider, I think, has looked...
Has it been fine?
I mean, outside of a window at the beginning of the year, let's say maybe his first 3 or 4 starts, he's been pretty good. The command is iffy, but the command has always been iffy with him. You know, it was never a strong suit.
I think he is less of a ceiling than you're giving him credit for. Like, I think he has a ceiling of a major league starter. I just think it's probably more.
Oh, you know, I don't. Mid rotation. I don't see ace in his future.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a mid to back end starter.
And for me, I'm just never going to put that guy. Like, when there's other options, I'm going to put the other options over that just because I find the other options more interesting. Like, Tidwell's in my top 10 for sure, but I don't even think Tidwell's the best pitcher in the system, let alone 3. So,
Tidwell isn't even in the top 10 for me.
Yeah, he's in my top 10 because I think he's played his way into it, honestly. I think he's been legitimately good. I know the fastball concerns. He has fastball shape issues, and the fastball's not great, and that's a big deal. But I think you could put him 10 and be fine.
I don't think he's meaningfully played his way into it, though, right? Like, this is supposed to be an advanced SEC arm. That's the – like, you should be able to drop that.
He has, what, maybe 50 innings total for his entire – collegiate career.
Okay, but what's the selling point then, right? Like, I'm just saying
that I feel like it's a bit of a misnomer to say that he's an advanced college pitcher. Yes, he did go to a good school and he did pitch for them, but it wasn't like he has 3 years of 100 plus innings.
Okay, I understand that point, but my counter argument to that is that that's central to the case, right? The argument with Tidwell is either that he's an advanced SEC arm and that is emblematic of his upside, or no, there is no war there. That is the argument for Tidwell because the results on their face have not backed that up, right? Like, his fastball gets below average whiffs. His slider is good in Brooklyn, but he has very limited control and command. And that's before we talk about the long-term shoulder injury risk here. Like this, I don't know. I feel like there are a couple names you could reasonably defend at four. Tidwell is wild to me. That's wild.
Oh, like I said, I guess it was a bit of a hot take.
Hmm.
Also, I mean, I'm not going to bury the lead here or anything like that, but as we go on, as we sum up, I guess, it'll become very apparent. I have very specific biases that are influencing where I'm ranking players here.
Mm.
All right, so number five.
Oh, five for me?
Anyone, just throw out a name.
Is Ryan Clifford, and my hot take is that if he's number one in the system next year, I would not be surprised.
You motherfucker.
God it's damn. Like, when I'm telling you, it's different. Like, seeing him live, he's had the best swing on the field Friday when I saw him. Like, the speed of it is faster than everyone else's. It's quicker through the zone than everyone's. He had an at-bat against a lefty that was... He fouled off some pitches. He took breaking balls in the dirt. Like, it's just that the reason why he's five is you don't know where he's going to play. If he's just a first baseman, it's you got to bump him down a bit, you know? If he could stand in left field, then hell yeah, you know? Like, if he's just a DH, then obviously, like, you work it, like, you could work him into that. But I don't know, man. Just... That swing was different. Like, even just sitting there for watching him for a game, it's just faster than everyone else's. You get him, man, he hits the ball hard. Like, yep. I think he's the guy who has the biggest chance to be a riser in the system. Him and Vargas, because of his age. Vargas is already knocking on the door for some people and is a kid. Like, he's young. So if he continues this, then he'll rise really fast too. But I don't know, man. Something about that Clifford swing is so different that I really hope he could just play left field or right field instead of just being a first baseman.
What is it? 20 home runs? 19?
I think it was the last number I remember was 18, but I don't know if that counts Fridays.
Yeah, I've got the same name here, and I made this point in the farm report yesterday that don't be surprised if by, like, spring of next year, or maybe, like, early summer, we're talking about Clifford as the best piece in the Justin Verlander trade as opposed to Gilbert.
And I don't want to say this. I don't know about you, Lucas, but I'm not knocking Gilbert on this. Like,
nope.
I think he's a great prospect. I like him more than – I know a few people don't like him and they have concerns about him, but I like him more than that. But I just think Clifford's the ability to – his pure power ability is insane to me. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's – from what I saw, a pretty good approach. Like, he's not just up there hacking and doing nonsense. Like, he's taking pitches that he shouldn't be swinging at. He's fouling off pitches. He's hitting the ball up the middle with authority for – he's not just hitting home runs, pulling them, you know, like he's doing mm-hmm. good things otherwise too. It's more of a complete hitting profile than I think he gets a little credit for, because you see the super big home runs, obviously that's what's going to get retweeted. But like it was two strikes on Friday with the runner on third. He smoked one right up the middle and it was right on it. Like, it was a ground ball single, and you're never going to be like, oh, what a prospect, he hit a ground ball single. But like, that's the type of stuff that you also need to do. Sometimes you just need a single, you know? And mm-hmm. it was a great at-bat, and I think it was two strikes, so he probably was protecting a little bit, and he just smoked one right up the middle, RBI single, and I was like, damn, you know? And earlier in that at-bat, he had a foul ball home run towards the parachute jump that was smoked, like absolutely destroyed. He was just early on it, and otherwise it would have been a second home run of the day. Like, that was gone.
Was that one hit further than the one he hit in, like, his first at-bat for Brooklyn in Asheville? Oh, well,
I mean, the one he hit on Friday, too, the home run to that part of the park is rare to hit a home run there.
Yeah.
That right center field gap, for people who haven't been there, it's very deep to right center in Brooklyn. And it wasn't really windy on Friday, because a lot of times the wind will blow in from the water there, in that from that direction. But there, it wasn't that windy that day, so we didn't have to fight through the wind. But still, that was a big boy home run. I think the Nashville one was still bigger, though. The first home run.
Yeah, and this is a dude with elite damage on contact, and to Thomas's point, and if you look at the data, and I've, again, this is another instance where I have not seen the data. I'm relying on secondhand reports of the data, but high-end swing decisions and in-zone contact, like, it's the trifecta of elite hitter traits.
Yeah.
At some point, if you're a good enough hitter, I don't really care where you can or can't play.
Yeah,
might be that good a hitter.
I'll agree with that. I think he has to get there. I don't think he's there yet. Obviously, he's in high A. But if he's doing this in double or triple A, I'm like, who cares, man? Just call him up at that point. And he's kind of sneaky. I don't want to say close to the majors, but next year he should be in double A.
Yep.
And then the year after that, he should be knocking on the door unless he really destroys double A next year, which is a possibility. I don't want to say it's a likelihood, but I think it's in the realm of possibilities that in like 2 years we're talking about him maybe. And then it's like, oh, but that's if everything goes well. Obviously, stuff could go sideways and he could struggle at the next level. You never know. Stuff happens with prospects, but I don't know. I came away very impressed with him, and I've been impressed with him since they traded for him. So.
Well, my number five is not Ryan Clifford. It is Mike Vassell. Similar arguments about Blade Tidwell.
Right. So you've gone, what, Acuna, Gilbert, and then who was three?
Jet.
All right. So Vargas and Clifford still on the board here. I don't get why you're higher on Tidwell than Vassell, frankly.
Vassell, his command is not great, and his pure stuff is not as good as Tidwell's, I don't think. He's been getting better. I've been tracking spoiler alert, he is the player of the week. So I've been crunching his numbers on these specific starts against Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, as opposed to his prior ones. He's throwing his fastball a lot more, like 20% of the time more. He's throwing it in the zone a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Inexplicably, he's been having success with that. I'm not really sure what's going on, what's making the difference. That is basically the main thing that I could see why he's having more success right now, as opposed to, the couple of weeks that he's been having. He's just throwing his fastball more and pounding it in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
But his fastball, I find, is not as dynamic as Tidwell's. He dips down to the concerning low 90s a lot more. There's been quite a lot of, 90, 90, 91 mile per hour fastballs, which not exactly grooved pitch in major leagues, but not the kind of velocity that you want to see. His slider is good. I don't think it's as good as Tidwell's. Their changeups are, very similar in their development as far third pitches. Vassell also has a curveball, which I think is kind of but it's a, I don't want to say like 1 and 1A. Like I did Acuna and Gilbert, but I think they are pretty close, Tidwell and Vassell, in my mind. With Tidwell getting the slight advantage.
Okay. I'm much more convinced by your Vassell argument than the Tidwell one. I like Mike Vassell.
Yeah,
Mike Vassell's pretty good.
I have him sixth.
Yep.
And
I have Ryan Clifford sixth, so we're okay, guys. We're okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I have Vassell sixth. He's just closer to the majors than Tidwell, and I think they're kind of in the same general pitching tier of mid to back end starters who were kind of boring. Like, boring doesn't mean bad. Like, sometimes you do need a boring fourth starter, you know? Like, I'm not saying that as a negative thing. It's just kind of true. There's nothing that really stands out for either of them for me, so Vasquez should be in the majors next year, and he's ahead of Tidwell for that reason. Like, if Tidwell had something that was a little more electric, I think I would put him higher, even though he was further away, but if you're in the same boat for me, then I'm just kind of going to take the guy closest to the majors here for pitching when they're all kind of the same. There's no real, I don't think there's a real difference perform like talent-wise. I think they're kind of similar, which, if, hey, and I mean, Christian Scott is in this boat too, where I'm sure we'll talk about him later, but he's also kind of like a mid to back end starter guy. So you get two or three of those, then you don't have to pay one, and then you could spend that money elsewhere. And we've talked about this a million times. So it's nice that they're starting to get some positive outlooks out of these guys. I think Tidwell does have a higher ceiling than Vassell, but I think Vassell is a little safer right now. So.
Mm-hmm. Lucas, who is your six?
Oh, sorry. I thought Vassell. Vassell is my six as well. Yep. Basically the same argument. And I think, as we already said, I'm not concerned about some early struggles in AAA, especially at this point in the season where I could imagine some of these guys are running out of gas a little bit, and also the AAA baseball is being played on the moon. So,
yeah, there's obviously something different about what's going on in AAA as opposed to what's going on in AA.
You mean like a 350 average being a, you know, 105 weighted is not normal?
Yeah, it's like... It's like the Ronnie Mauricio argument. Like, he's killing the ball when you look at it, just if you don't look at the other stuff, and it's like, wow, holy shit, what a performance. And then it's like, oh, that's kind of league average, which is like, it is okay. What are you supposed to do with that information?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell. I was looking, like, they haven't admitted that there's anything different about the International League ball or anything. I don't know.
Yes, because Rob Manfred is infamously a reliable source of open information who shares things openly and quickly.
Right. Well, yeah.
Particularly with regard to the nature of the ball.
Of course. But yeah, there's something in the water in the International League. All right. Number seven.
I've got take Hauk. Is that how we're pronouncing it, right? Colin Hauk?
I believe it is Colin Hauk.
Yeah. I usually this isn't some... Also not a profile I typically love. Just the general... The second tier prep shortstop prospect who either explodes or suddenly can't hit and we forget about him in 3 years. Or we spend the next 5 years saying, maybe he'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Because that's what these... very boom or bust here. This ranking is basically I don't know. We'll see in 6 months.
Yeah, I mean,
he could be anywhere from like 1 to 20 next year.
I don't know. I agree with you. It's tough. He hasn't really done anything. Obviously, as a professional, he's not going to this year. It doesn't really matter what he does this year. Whether he hits 100 or hits 800, it doesn't matter. It's not enough games to care. So they took him in the first round for a reason. We'll see next year. I think Hauk is fine for me at 7. I do have someone at 8 who Lucas is going to yell at me about, but
you also had Hauk at 7?
Yeah.
I had Kevin Parada at 7.
Ooh, that's another hot take of mine. We'll get into that when we finish our lists.
Similar to, like I was saying with Tidwell, we had a kind of crappy first month. Parada had a crappy first month, and he's basically been a 300-plus hitter since. You have to take into account Brooklyn. I think he has a, like, 110 WRC+, so he is a better-than-average hitter. He's hurt now. Not really sure how much of the injury has impacted the rest of his season, but whatever. Let's just pretend that, you know, it didn't have any kind of impact. The biggest thing is the catching. He is not a good catcher.
That's underselling it.
Well, yes.
And that's why. All right. Well, I guess we could just. Lucas, do you have Parada here?
No. I have. Okay. After Hauk? No. I have Hauk at 7, and then I have someone else at
8.
Am I counting correctly? Yes. Yeah, I have someone else at 8, and then I have Parada at 9, actually, and I don't feel great about it. I keep moving him down to what you just said about the defense and what Steve started about the defense. Yep. He's not a good catcher. He is arguably not a catcher. I do not feel qualified to judge catcher defense.
Nor do I think
anyone is, because how many times have we said this dude isn't a catcher and then they improve back there somehow?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
As recently as when he was in Binghamton, people who I consider smarter than myself, more knowledgeable of myself, were saying that Francisco Alvarez is not a good catcher. He doesn't do pretty much anything particularly great behind the plate. And the Mets changed the way that he caught, and now he is a pretty good catcher. I haven't sat down and crunched looked at every single game to assess how he's catching, how he's moving, whatever. But the Mets already have a big developmental win in terms of taking a raw catcher and turning him into something better. So I'm giving Parada the benefit of the doubt here that he is a smart baseball player. He is a guy that, by all accounts, was willing to learn and put in extra work, which were also not accolades. That's not the right word. We're also good things audits. That we heard. Yes, we're also good things that we heard about Francisco Alvarez as well.
Yeah. The bigger thing for me, honestly, is the offense. And I know he had a bad month, and that's dragging the numbers down. I know Brooklyn's hard to hit in, but much like Tidwell, this is a high-end college performer from a major conference. You should be able to drop him into Brooklyn, and he should fucking demolish the league. And very much has not.
Same thing like I was saying with Tidwell. Parada has about 100-ish games at Georgia Tech. He only played 2 seasons.
I disagree with that completely. He should have destroyed Brooklyn, and he didn't. Hey, he's not in my top 10.
There's definitely, I feel like the onus was on him a lot more than Tidwell to do well quickly, because Parada was drafted 11.
And he was a consensus, like, top 5.
Yeah, he was ranked 5th, usually.
Like, that, if you're supposed to be a top 5 pick as a college performer, you better hit like 330 in high A, facing dudes who are the same level, if not a little worse sometimes, than some guy you'd face on Tuesday at college, you know?
Those, like, Tuesday games.
I'm obviously, like, being facetious, but you know what I mean. Like, this is the level of competition he should be more than comfortable with, and he just didn't play well. I don't know. Let's take his name out of consideration. There's a prospect who isn't a good catcher, who is currently a catcher. Yep. He has not played another position professionally, and he has barely been an above-average hitter. Is that a top-10 prospect in a good system?
No.
That's why he's not in my top-10. I don't care that his name is Kevin Parada. Can he get back into the top? Of course. Like, it's not static. Like, if he catches better, if he works on the offseason on his catching and comes back and is a good catcher, we're having a whole different conversation. If he goes and learns second base and goes Craig Biggio mode or Neil Walker mode, you know what I mean? Then we're having a different conversation, because the bat plays up. Does the bat play up in left field? It hasn't yet. Like, this hitter is not a good, if this hitter is a left field prospect, I'm like, he's like 13th, 14th.
He's fancy Carlos Cortez at that point.
Whoa. And that's a problem, you know? And so, like, he has to either get better hitting or get better catching, and he hasn't done either one yet. So with the influx of talent the Mets have in the system, I don't see how I could rank him in the top 10. Like, I have Ronnie Mauricio 8 and I know Lucas is going to yell at me about that. But
damn it.
I already heard the...
But the reason why I have him 8 is if you put... I don't see how Parada is a better prospect than him, because Ronan Russo is going to be a major league player. Will he be a good one? I don't know. Probably not. He has a huge flaws, but he also has... You could probably... A good team will be able to figure out pitchers to pitch against him as a DH and move him around the diamond a little bit. Kevin Parada is currently a positionless high A player, so I'm a little down on him.
Okay, this is an interesting discussion, because I'm going to pretty vehemently disagree with that, I think. I think Parada is also a major leaguer. First of all, I think Ronnie Mauricio is a left fielder. I do not think he's an infielder. At which point, you're basically talking about...
Let's move to 8 now. So now we're going to talk Ronnie Mauricio here. It's our first mention of Ronnie. All right.
Yeah. Who do you have at 8, Steve?
I have Jacob Raymer.
Okay. That's who I have at 8.
Nice. I have Raymer 9, so we could talk about that.
Raymer's a nice little player. He's a nice pick in the 4th round. Probably can't play defense, which is
that's why I have him 9.
Weird. It's odd. How come the Mets can't teach anyone to play defense?
I don't understand, dude. Everyone. Just like hire a defense instructor, please.
Someone. Isn't this what you're supposed to get when you've got all these old school baseball men in your organization? Aren't they supposed to know how to teach the youths how to play defense?
But yeah, with Ronnie, I don't know. Like, he's just much closer to the majors. He should be up. He should be up now, honestly, even though he's been struggling, just to see what it looks like. He's already on the 40. Who cares if you waste an option and a little bit of time? If he sucks, then you can send him back down and let him figure out AAA again or whatever. But obviously, I'm not a huge fan of him. We know this. The only reason why I have him 8 is because you probably get some major league utility out of him soon. If you're smart enough, I think good teams have had, he legitimately hits the ball hard. It's just approach issues. And if you could leverage his at bats against only righties and only certain righties, then it should be fine. I don't know if the Mets know how to do that. This current regime of the Mets definitely doesn't, but I don't think any of us on this podcast expect Buck Showalter and friends to come back next year. So
if Buck Showalter is the manager of the Mets next year, I'm going to both be surprised and extremely angry. there's just no way.
Because it's not allowed to be official, but John Heyman keeps writing about how David Stearns is going to have this job next year.
Bob Nightingale keeps just tweeting it.
Bob Nightingale is just out here saying oh yes, the guy who everyone in the industry knows is going to, and obviously it could happen and no one will be surprised. It might not happen. You never know until the contract signs, but I very highly doubt Stearns comes over and allows Buck Showalter to do his thing. But you could optimize him in a way where it's fine as a bench player. And you just kind of let it rock with the DH, and you worse players get leveraged and are fine with really good teams. I just don't think he's a top prospect in the system, but it is what it is, you know? Hits the ball hard, and some team is going to try to fix him if they trade him. I think they're going to try to trade him for pitching, which, thank God, I hope they do, so I don't have to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, maybe the Royals will give you I'd rather do a Brady Singer reclamation project or something like that.
I could see them doing some shit like that.
I think that'd be a legitimately interesting bet. Like, Brady Singer does some cool things. Anyway,
do you want to get into the Ronnie Mauricio discourse even further, or do you just want to let it be? Because
I will not let it be. I will never let this be. I'll continue my campaign. Campaign of contempt. And I'm going to draw the parallel to Kevin Parada, right? So why do I think Kevin Parada is a better prospect than Ronnie Mauricio? I think both of them are left fielders. Maybe Ronnie's a right fielder. They could both be right fielders. I think they both have good arms. They're corner outfielders, corner players. Ronnie is certainly higher in the minors, and he hits the ball harder, and he makes more contact in the zone, I think. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'll take that for the moment. Bronny's flaws are more catastrophic than Parada's in my mind. Kevin Parada has flaws that are ceiling limiting. Mauricio has flaws that are viability limiting. Like, Kevin Parada doesn't hit the ball as hard as we'd like. Kevin Parada doesn't make as much contact as we'd like. He does things well enough where he'll be a bad hitter, but he'll be a major league hitter. Ron and Mauricio's problems are so extensive that I remain fairly convinced that any competent major league pitcher, and certainly any major league pitcher on a team with a competent analytics and preparation staff, is going to dice him up with no problems at all. And to me, that means he's not a viable major league hitter. So the approach problems are that bad. And more importantly, Kevin Parada's problems are new. We do not have certainty on his ability to fix them. Ronnie Mauricio's problems are old, and I think we're reaching the point of certainty on his ability to not actually fix them. How many years have we had this same conversation about Ronnie and nothing has improved? Right. Like, this is 4 years of this. Like, okay, he needs to improve his approach. He needs to improve his approach. He hasn't. At some point, it's indicative of just the player not being able to do it.
So my only pushback with, I think we're speaking in certainty about, oh, Parada's a corner position player. We don't know that. Like, there's a possibility where Parada is unable to play the outfield because he just doesn't.
Yeah.
Can't try. Yeah. Like, look, remember when they put Daniel Murphy out there? Like, that was unviable. Like,
oh, man, that was a good time.
But, like, it's true, though. Like, you would, like, you think you could just stick a guy out in left field and be like, eh, it's fine, even if he's whatever. But there's a level where it's too bad, you know?
When Johan Santana almost murders you on opening day.
And, like, I think this is kind of why Reimer is 9 for me and 8 for you guys, is we don't know where where he ends up yet defensively. Yep. And, like, Reimer, I think, is a little more, even though he just made Brooklyn, like, a little more advanced with the bat, with his approach and stuff like that. Where Parada, if Parada was destroying the ball like he did in this recent stretch all year, I would probably still have him 8 over someone like Mauricio, because my 9 and 10 are kind of set. I'm looking at it a different way. But he hasn't been. So when you're kind of disappointing in Brooklyn for where you were drafted and what your level of competition before the draft, your catching has been rough, and you haven't been moved to another position so you could even see that he could play another position, it's hard for me to get there to just assume that he can, you know? Like, I think that's making a jump where, like, and to the Mets' discredit, they should have been trying to move Mauricio around quicker. Like, he should have spent the entire year, maybe even some of last year, playing second and third and left and whatever, because Lindor's here forever. Like, I know they wanted to keep him as a shortstop to try to trade him at the deadline because he's more valuable as a shortstop to another team than he would be as a utility prospect. But at some point, you have to realize when you're 14 and 15 and the vibes are terrible, we might not be making additions at the deadline. Like, they should have been a little more forthcoming with that. Maybe, obviously, they tried very hard not to sell, and I understand why, because when you spend $360 million, whatever the hell it is, you don't want to fucking sell at the deadline. But I don't know. They should have been quicker with that. Maybe he'd be up in the majors faster. I don't know. But it's tough because I don't know. The vision for Parada is right now he is a positionless player who's been a little above average in Brooklyn, and he needed to be well above average offensively for me to get there. You know, and it's still problems with the stance and with the weird stuff he does in the box. And sometimes
how much better might he be if they just fix the fucking stance?
And like, 1 week it looks like he will fix it and he won't do it anymore. And then the next week he will. And I don't really understand what's going on with that. But the thing is, I sound like I'm a huge Parada hater. Like, I still really like him, and I'm trying to figure out a way to put him in the top 10. It's just, I think other guys have played their way into it. Or in a way that he's like 11 for me, you know, like, he's right there. And if he comes back next year and is a better catcher or a better hitter, like I was saying, then he's easily right into the top 10, 100%. But I just think the system's better now, you know, like. the system's better. So it's the same thing.
Point.
Alex Ramirez isn't in this conversation either when he would have been locked in. And I don't think any of us even thought of him. Like, I would be shocked if either one of us did. Or three of us did, you know?
All right, well, let's go to number nine then. Does anyone have Alex Ramirez as number nine?
That'd be really funny. But no,
no, no. My nine is Parada.
Thomas, who's your nine?
Reimer.
I have Christian Scott.
Oh,
okay. I like it. I thought I'd be the high man on Scott, and I'm not.
Nope. I like him. Stuff looks good. I thought about, you know, because I have Tidwell and Vasil a little bit higher, and I feel like Scott is in that tier. The only thing, though, that causes me to drop him down a little bit is, you know, he's not as far as, like, a Vasil is, and he's a bit older. I think he's, like, 24 this season, turning 25, so.
Yeah, because he had a weird college thing, right? Like, he was in college for a long time or something?
Yeah, there was some injuries and didn't play, and so that's the only thing that's what causes separation from those other guys. But, you know, there's a lot to like about him.
Mm-hmm. I like him, too.
I like him more than Tidwell.
He misses my top 10 a little bit, but I like him.
All right. Number 10.
I have Christian Scott.
Nice. I have Tidwell. I'd have Tidwell 10.
I have Mauricio 10.
Yeah. I mean,
no one knew to discuss.
Yeah. We talked about all that.
Scott's really nice. I mean, he might be a reliever. All these guys might be relievers. Every pitcher might just be a reliever. I think his stuff would really play up in the bullpen if that's where he landed.
I could see him being the best reliever out of the bunch.
Has he had the best double A season of anyone aside from Vasil so far?
I would say probably. I mean, his ERA is 2.67 right now. He's allowing well below, you know, a 6.3 hits per nine, which is very good. His walk rate is almost 1 per 9, which is excellent. And his strikeout is almost 11, which again is excellent.
He's got like a 7-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio, give or take. Like, and 69 strikeouts, very nice.
He's definitely played his way into, I hope the Mets give him a chance to start for real. Like,
yeah.
He was one of those guys where I was on the fence on when they drafted him. Like, oh, he could kind of swing either way, I don't know. But I would hope that the Mets let him try to be a starter in Syracuse and in the majors. If it doesn't work out, obviously, you can move him to the bullpen. It won't. It is what it is. No one will cry about it. But he's pitched well, really well.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might be the biggest surprise of the season. Yes. For me,
everyone's going to be, the casuals will be lapping the Tyler Stewart breakout, but the actual breakout is Christian Scott, I think.
Honestly, I agree. Like, Stewart, I think, is kind of just there. Like, I don't know. He's been good performance-wise, but I think
smoke and mirrors, but I know what you're saying.
He's like a little bit of he's a step down between, I think there's like three, I think Vasil, Tidwell, Scott are like the top three pitchers in the system. And then it's like Sproat, because we haven't really seen him, so it's hard to tell. And then Stewart is in that second tier. Obviously, Sproat, if with major league development or professional development, rather, could fly up, or if he doesn't take to it, he kind of stays in that second spot. It's hard to tell. I don't know where to put him. I hate ranking draftees because I don't know. Like, dude, I saw you play in the College World Series. You didn't. It's hard to tell, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, even Hauk is a weird one. Like, you got to put him in the top 10, but it's hard. But, I feel like Stewart's in that second tier where he could get more stuff and move up. And obviously, I think the Mets have had some pitching development wins this year with Tidwell looking a lot better and Scott and Vasil looking a lot better and, like, leaving the Dominic Hamels and Calvin Ziegler's, even though he's been hurt the whole time. Kind of, some guys have taken to it, some guys haven't, but I think Stewart is kind of in that second tier.
Agreed. I think Stewart, if we had more, I don't even know if there is way to capture this data. I mean, he's a big guy and his release point is, or his extension, I should say, not his release point. You know, we know that has a.
In effect, yeah. It's hard to quantify that.
Right, exactly. Like, so that's the kind of thing, like, we could see the numbers are doing great. You know, his surface numbers and the peripherals as well. And the, you know, the limited, you know, StatCast kind of data that we have suggests that his pitches are on a, like you said, on a second tier behind some of these other guys. But yet he's getting it done at an unbelievable rate. So, like, what is that? What is the X?
And it could be deception. It could be extension, and it just looks faster and looks harder to hit. Who knows? Right. Like, it's hard. And that stuff is hard.
Yeah, and those are things that we kind of really can't quantify yet. So it's like, well, I don't know if we can say how legit Stewart is.
Yeah. I also feel like he has the biggest, I feel like he has the biggest chance out of the four that we just mentioned, if we're going to lap him in there to be a reliever, Stewart. Like, I would, I don't want to say I'd be surprised if the other three are not starters, but I think Vassell is a back-end starter, and Tidwell is a back-end starter, and Scott has a chance to be that. Like, he's right there. And I think Stewart is more of a, if he's like a seventh inning guy, then that's great. Like, sign me up for that, where they've drafted him and all that stuff. Like, that's a development win. It's just, I don't know if he's going to be a starter. Like, I'm more sure about the other guys being starters. That's really it for why he just misses for me.
He could be the new John Roush.
But also, like, I was thinking about this when you said that we were going to do a top 10. The system is so much deeper now.
Yeah.
Like, where we could go to 15 and talk about, like, actual guys that are, like, interesting. Where 2 years ago, we're going to 15 and I'm like, bro, please.
I no longer have an excuse to shove Matt Rudick or Dylan DeBrake into my top 10.
Exactly. And, like, we didn't even talk about, like, Ronald Hernandez and, like, and he's an interesting guy and... Like, Justin Jarvis is, like, a mid-tier prospect for the system now and all that stuff. And a lot of the draftees, I don't know. The guy they got from Arizona, who's, like, an interesting DSL guy.
Lucas, you're the only one that ranked Tauk, right? You didn't have him.
No, I put him, I think I put him second.
Oh, right.
Because it's just, he was, like, he was, like, a top 15 prospect in the draft, and they took him at 30. Like, I'm going to put him in the top 10.
But yeah, I completely agree about the depth and how much better it is now than 2 weeks ago.
And yeah, it's for real.
A year ago.
Because, like, before, it's like, if you didn't make the top 10 in the system, it was like, ooh, like, how much of a prospect? But now, I could go to 15 and name guys who I'm interested in and, like, really could think have a chance to do something.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Top prospects for 2023. Oops, that's 2022. I'm typing with one hand here. All right, so we have our top prospect list for 2023. At number 11, we had Calvin Ziegler. Nothing against Calvin Ziegler, but he was coming into the year last year, limited to 40 innings of not that great, but not bad either. Low A ball.
Yeah.
Single A, excuse me. We had Stanley Consuegra, 13. He was coming off of a good season, but still. We had Joel Diaz, 15.
Rest in peace.
Matthew Allen, 16, rest in peace.
Ugh. I mean, look, I feel like I mailed it in on this list because usually I get to go digging through the Mets' recent draft. And I mean, this is how I come up with Dylan DeBrake as a guy I like. Who I stand by, but, like, there's no need for me to go do that and start justifying why I like, I mean, fuck, I can't even remember the name of the mid-round arm that I found particularly intriguing when they took him. Like, oh my god, what the hell was his name? I've already forgotten. So we're not here doing that, because we don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Much better system now. All right, so just to sum, I had Acuna 1, Gilbert 2, Jet Williams 3, Tiglo 4, Vasil 5, Clifford 6, Parada 7, Raymer 8, Christian Scott 9, and Ronnie Mauricio 10. Lucas?
Yep. I had Gilbert, Acuna, Jett, Vargas, Clifford, Vasil, Hauk, Reimer, Parada, and Christian Scott at 10.
Thomas?
I had Gilbert, Acuna, Vargas, Williams, Clifford, Vasil. Wait, that's six, right?
Yep.
Vasil, Hauk, Mauricio, Reimer, Tidwell, with honorable mention Kevin Parada, like right there. I wish I could do 10B, but alas, rules are rules.
Rules, rules. Sorry, man. And we are definitely going to grill Ken next week. So I hope he doesn't listen, and I hope he doesn't like.
Ken has to do top 30 because he.
Oh
missed.
Shit! Yeah, oh, that's.
That's rough.
And we don't tell him until the day of.
Right, we just put him on the spot. All right, who's your top 30 right now?
In reverse order.
I feel like this year it actually would not be too much of a hassle to go 30 deep.
No, I think I could get to 20 pretty quick, I think, so.
Yeah.
Then I would have to, like, scratch and claw a little bit to get to 30, but I think I could get there. But a few other years, if you asked me for 30 and I was like, Steve, this violates the Geneva Convention, please.
A few other years, ask more than, like, 13, and you're like,
oh. But that's what Cohen wanted, so here we are.
Yep. All right, well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at Evlahos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening. And we are Patreon-based, so if you do like our podcast or any of the other ones that are in the Homer and Apple network, you can subscribe for just $5 a month. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.